Welcome to the Endurance Horse Podcast, where endurance riders from all across the globe gather, sharing their stories, goals, and progress as they train for and compete in endurance events at every level. So kick off your shoes, pull up a chair, and listen as we gather around the virtual campfire and listen to friends from across the world.
Happy Daylight Savings, everybody. Isn't this like a national horse holiday? Or it should be, because that means we have a lot more time to ride once we get off of work. And spring is just a few days around the corner. So yay, it does feel like a horse holiday to me. So as you all are out there getting a little extra bit of sunshine, I just thought I would bring you this new episode of Endurance Horse Podcast. I'm your host, Chris Hike, and it is March, and soon equestrians everywhere will be booking appointments with their veterinarians. Coggins test, teeth done, sheath cleaning, health certificates, you name it. The vets are going to be out there to help get your horses down the road this year. This spring, whether you've had your appointment with your veterinarian or not, I'd like to challenge you. Take a moment, write them a note, maybe include a picture of your horse, dog, cat, or whatever animal that your vet is caring for, and write them a sincere thank you. If you haven't been able to tell yet, this episode of the podcast is a little different. It's taking a twist. Because in this episode, we are talking with Dr. Brian Borquin, president of Not One More Vet. Today's topic is all about the veterinarians in our lives, the challenges that they face, and what we can do as their clients to help support them, as they support us so much and the animals that we love. So without further ado, I'd like to introduce you to Dr. Brian Borquin. So today on Endurance Horse Podcast, we're welcoming Dr. Borquin, who is now the president of NOMV. Welcome to the podcast, Dr. Brian.
Well, thank you. Thank you for having me here. I would never have thought I would be on an Endurance Horse Podcast. So the world takes us in strange directions.
It does. Typically, my first question to guests is, how did they get into horses? But for you today, I'm going to say, how did you get into the veterinary practice?
Sure. I have one of those stories that I don't think is very unique in that I can't imagine ever wanting to do anything else. As long as I remember, I wanted to be a veterinarian. I think I could was saying it before I could even pronounce it as a young child. From the time I could almost legally work, I was cleaning out runs. Every vacation became my after-school job, summer vacations, holidays, etc. So, in fact, I remember going to the college counselor and saying, well, what is your backup plan? And I was like, what is this backup plan you speak of? Like, I don't need a backup plan. I'm going to be a veterinarian. And lo and behold, I am.
Was it the love of animals or the love of trying to help animals?
I think all of the above. You know, initially, yes, it was, you know, I was that little kid who, when other kids were watching cartoons, I was watching National Geographic and Mutual Omaha safari shows. So I've always had a clear connection with animals. Both my grandparents were farmers, so I've been surrounded by animals. My poor mom and dad, I was always trying to bring home some quote, lost animal, usually had neighbors attached to it. So I've always had an affinity to that, but then also fairly quickly realizing that I could touch, you know, human lives, that I could make the lives of humans better by helping their four-legged friends. And so for me, it was, just a perfect combination of using my love of animals for a profession, but then also helping, you know, I'm a very giving, empathetic person, also by helping other human beings.
I was talking to my husband before we had this interview, and I said, what is something you would love to ask him? And he said, tell us about your schooling. And because he thinks it would be way harder to become a vet than a doctor, because, you know, a doctor is just learning about the human body, but you've had to learn about, you know, how many different species of animals.
You know, for a very long time, and I think it's still the case, veterinary school is the hardest school to get into. At one point, there were only 27 vet schools. There's more than that now. I think we're up in the 30s, and there's more on the way. But there's still, when you consider there's not even a vet school per state, of a couple have two. First of all, there's just not as many schools. So that, just as a numbers game, makes it one of the hardest professions to get into. So you have to know four species: horse, cow, dog, and cat, as well as having a passing knowledge of pigs, goats, sheep, and they're just general birds, fish, et cetera. So, you know, that in itself, you know, we make a joke that, you know, what do you call someone who only has to know one species, you know, an MD? the big difference is whereas I can start practicing after 8 years, you know, on the MD side, they do have to do internships and residency. So there are different complexities, but it is harder initially to get into vet school, and we do have to know more species. And then as medicine has just gotten more and more complicated, what used to be just a passing knowledge is now you have to know all these, you know, advanced procedures. So I would say it's not getting any easier.
Can you tell me about how you became involved with NAMVI?
Sure. You know, I, like many others, did not realize that death by suicide was an issue in the veterinary world. So I remember going to an Uncharted Veterinary Conference brought by Andy Work, and it's a conference that goes around more of the soft skills. So instead of going to learn how to be a better medical clinician, you go to learn how to be a better human being, how to be a better boss, how to be a better leader, how to be a better coworker. Dr. Carrie Journey got up and spoke about this organization called Not One More Vet. And I had a passing understanding it's something to do with mental health, but didn't really know much about it. And, you know, she spoke very eloquently on this, you know, issue in the veterinary world. And as she and I and my husband became better friends with her, he realized that we had a lot of experience in raising money for nonprofits. Mm. And as their organization was exploding and they had a board, she was looking for other people in the veterinary profession who had some experience in that realm. And both my husband and I had worked extensively for the Human Rights Campaign. We are not afraid to ask for money and talk about money and talk about, you know, things that are not always so popular. So death by suicide, you know, that's not the same as talking about, you know, EPM or distemper in a dog, right? So there's kind of more controversial things, and that was things that we could speak about. So that's how we initially were brought into it. She asked us to be board members. That was 4 years ago. We served on the board to help grow the programming and just the getting more of a nationwide recognition, because initially it started as NAMVI, Not One Vet, started as a support group or chat space in the forums on Facebook, then is grown into the largest nonprofit for veterinary professionals as a whole. So I will try to be careful of that. Sometimes I can be a little veterinary focused. So if I do say the word veterinary, I'm actually meaning veterinary professionals, everyone in the veterinary community, not just the veterinarian.
For sure. All the vet techs, you mean, and the support staff, the whole clinic, right?
Exactly. Exactly, because they all suffer from the same hardships that cause, you know, veterinarians to struggle with mental health, you know, and sometimes it's even harder on our support staff, because at least as veterinarians we get fairly good financial salaries, but, you know, many of the other support staff, sometimes it's barely even above the poverty line. So add that kind of financial hardship to, I'm sure we'll talk about what makes this a unique challenge for the veterinary professionals, and it's even harder for them. And that's definitely a direction that NAMVI is trying to go for, is make sure that we're including the entire veterinary profession when we have these discussions.
That leads me to, I wonder if some people are tuning in because they want to hear their stories and get information about endurance horses, but they need to realize that this is an issue, and it's a hard issue to talk about. I have broached this with a couple of vets and said, what do you think? Why is this a problem? And they told me three things, which was the number one reason shocked me, but it was debt was like the top reason. Some of them thought it was the availability of drugs to do so. And then, you know, the struggle of facing these hard decisions every day when they, like, maybe they knew they could save an animal, but say it's a grandma on limited income and she loves this dog, but she doesn't have $5,000, you know, extra over even the course of a year to save the dog. And so this was kind of what was said to me. And I thought, I don't want to bring such a heavy topic that seems like we can't help. I thought, besides supporting NAMVI, it's March for horse people. We're all going to see our vets, usually, to get a Coggins test and spring shots and checkup and teeth and stuff, to go ahead and support them by writing a card. And if you can, you know, stick in there like a gift card to somewhere you think they would like, and tell them how much it means that you have them as your vet, that they take care of your animal, or put a picture of your pet in there and thank them.
Well, first I would say you've been very well informed. So of my usual five things that I discuss, why death by suicide is a larger concern in the veterinary world than perhaps in other professions, you've already hit three of them. So you've got some good veterinarians in your life. So, you know, number one is I would say that the veterinary profession draws from a pool of people who are already set themselves up a little bit for more hardships, right? So as a whole, we tend to be overachievers. We're people who are used to doing the best of what we do, you know, to get into veterinary school, you know, you were the top of your class. We tend to be very, very empathetic, right? So, you know, an animal can't necessarily tell you that it doesn't feel good. So you have to be able to be in touch with the animal's feelings through empathy and also for the client. And so when you're an overachiever and you enter into a profession, you can't always get the best results, whether that could be because of time, right? So if we look at what COVID has done on the small animal side, I can't speak to the large animal side, although I've heard that hobby farms have definitely taken off further. But, you know, when you've got X amount of animals you have to see a day and you're having to rush and maybe you don't have time to look up a disease to the extent you want, or you don't have as much time with a client, you know, that's gonna start to take a toll on you, especially if you have gone in it because you want to help animals and help people, and you're not helping them because of time constraints. Hmm. Number two, as you said, money, right? So, you know, our 8 years of school are no cheaper than 8 years of school for anybody else. Mm-hmm. And when you look at some of our other professions, dentists and ophthalmologists and MDs, you know, they come out making some pretty big dollars, so they can pay those loans off a lot faster. I've got colleagues who they graduated with $500,000 in loans. Mm-hmm. You know, you're not going to pay that off making $100,000 a year. No. And that's a nice salary compared to what veterinarians used to be. So even though we have the same amount of years, for some of the private vet schools, you're graduating with, you know, $500,000 of loans. And then, you know, I think very important is we're one of the few professions who money really gets in the way of being able to provide the best care. So I can be the smartest vet in the world. I can have the best tools, the best staff. But if I can't, one, convince you that your pet needs it, and two, that you are ready to pay for that care, then I'm sometimes having to pick the second, the third, sometimes the fourth lowest rung of treatment available. So, you know, to not be able to adequately care for the pets in front of you, your patients, that takes a huge toll. And then to your point, you know, veterinarians do have and veterinary professionals, a very different relationship with euthanasia. You know, mm-hmm. No other profession has the ability to use euthanasia as a treatment to put an animal out of its misery, right? Now, and I'm fortunate. I practice in Boston. My clinics, we don't have to do convenience euthanasia. I'm not in the shelter system, so I'm not putting healthy animal to sleep. But, you know, it's hard enough to have to sometimes say goodbye to a pet. But if you know that you've reached the end of the line, that you can't provide proper pain management anymore, that the animal's in pain, well, so we have made peace with that kind of, you know, if I can say, you know, playing the part of God, where we're deciding and sometimes having to convince a client that it's time to say goodbye. So everyone in the veterinary world has likely had to really think about euthanasia and make peace with it. So, you know, if you're going through life and you're a ton of debts and, you know, you're probably your home life is not great because money is an issue and money never brings out the best in us as partners. Mm-hmm. And you know, you see your suffering and every day starts to look as bad as the next. You know, you can see why maybe death by suicide suddenly becomes an option. Mm-hmm. And it's less of a mental step to go there than I think it is for the general population. Mm-hmm. The other is access to those drugs, right? So mm-hmm. if you're having an exceptionally bad day and maybe you've got a horrible Google review and you've gotten yelled at by three pet parents and it's just one of those days you just want to literally just die, well, there's something over there in the cabinet that you know can help you with that. Now, the good thing is we have realized the access to euthanasia drugs, and there are steps. There's a system called Cubex now, and there are now some steps that are put in place. But we know how to do it. We know how to do it efficiently. And so, you know, a lot of times when you hear about death by suicide, it's a cry for help. We usually ever don't get a second chance because it's, it, we get it right the first. I shouldn't say get it right. Mm-hmm. We're effective the first time, mm-hmm. and so you know, for me, I don't think there's any one of those areas that is the reason why this is a problem. And it's not a new problem. You know, that's something some people say. Oh well, why is this a problem today? It's not a problem today. This has been happening for decades in the veterinary world. But you know, no one wants to be the profession that admits to, oh, you know, we've got a problem in mental health and mental wellness. Well, veterinarians through now we've got a platform for that. And we're spreading mm-hmm. that knowledge and saying, hey, you're not alone. And this is where I love that you're giving away to how does a client help their veterinarian? Well, saying thank you. You know, when you say things like you're only in it for the money, which I've heard many, many a time, I will promise you, no veterinarian or any veterinary professional is in veterinary medicine for the money. You mm-hmm. can look at any other parallel move, right? So a veterinary tech to like a dental hygienist, a front desk at a vet clinic versus the front desk in Rome. And I will promise you they can get paid more elsewhere. I've mm-hmm. seen it. So, you know, saying thank you, being respectful. When your veterinarian does something good or your tech does something good, go to Google and say nice things. Mm-hmm. Give a card. Remember, we are human beings. We are there because we want to help you and your pay. And, you know, everyone understands like a bad day or we see pet parents at their, I'm saying pet parents. I don't know if that's the correct word for
that's
for horses, so I apologize.
Yep. No, it's fine.
It's the vernacular I'm used to. I try mm-hmm. not to say owner. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, we understand that we see you at your worst, but realize that sometimes it's at our worst. You know, watching mm-hmm. a patient, you know, slowly die of a disease, that's not easy enough either. So I love that you immediately, without me even having to ask, Rhys, said, well, you know, what can we do to make a difference? Because knowing that there's thankful, and there are many, many thankful clients out there. But you know what vets tend to do? We tend to, like everybody else, we concentrate on that bad one. We concentrate on that bad review. We can have 110 good reviews. It's that bad review that keeps us up at night. And so just by saying thankful, knowing, you know, giving some money, NAMVI.org, where we can actually continue to publicize and advertise and let people know that we've got programs like Clear Blueprint, which is accreditation for clinics, so people can know this is a clinic that the people actually really take the time and care about their staff. Like silly things, like I let my staff take a lunch break, which you'd think, well, who wouldn't do that? But when you've got pet parents saying we demand our animals to be seen, you know, we're a clinic that says no, our staff needs that break. And so mm-hmm. sometimes it's just silly things. And then also having programs with Lifeboat, which is peer-to-peer pod counseling, just, you know, that extra $5, $10, et cetera, is going straight to you. So I'm a volunteer. I don't get paid for this. But, you know, it's important to me to help save my profession and to make veterinary medicine the amazing career for everyone that it is for me. I love my profession. You know, I want to help keep people in this profession. And one of the best ways to do that is just support them.
Can you describe Lifeboat? Because I do know we have a few veterinarians that listen, because there would be no endurance riding without veterinarians. And a few of them have picked up on the podcast and maybe they could share this with their peers. But can you just highlight what Lifeboat is, how it functions, and how you can be completely anonymous with Lifeboat?
Yeah, so, you know, the Facebook was a lovely place for Not One More Vet to start, but it wasn't anonymous, right? You had to go on there. And also, as it grew and grew, suddenly you might see your coworkers on there. You might see your boss on there. Well, are you going to go on there and be, you know, say X, Y, Z? So we knew that it was going to be a struggle. And then as some of the political stuff has happened with Facebook, there was the fear, well, what if this forum suddenly disappears? So very early on, Dr. Carrie Journey and a few other members from other organizations said, well, what if we set up this kind of like pod of peer-to-peer support? I want to say first what Lifeboat is not. Lifeboat is not meant for a crisis, okay? So if someone is in a mental health crisis or having ideology of death by suicide, that's not what this is for. This is to help those who maybe have already come over that or who are looking for support to not get to that place. And it's peer support via pod. There's now an app for it. And basically, as you sign up for Lifeboat, lifeboat. It's basically as a lifeboat, right? It's to help keep you afloat. And you have three people in your pod, and they provide support. It's asynchronous, meaning it's not in live time, but you would go on there and say, hey, I need to get the set up. Usually within 24 hours, we put you in a pod. It's, you know, peer-to-peer support to help you just get over stuff, to be accountable to someone. So you've got these other people. And then behind the scenes, there are mental health professionals that will support the people in the pod to be able to help that participant. It's a newer program. It's doing amazing. We are looking for volunteers to be peer support advocates. We are looking for financial contributions. We'd love to have more money so we could actually hire more people to work on the weekends. And then, you know, the process of just keeping up an app. So we look for support for all those areas, financial, volunteer, and then also people who need the program.
And correct me if I'm wrong, but there is like a national number, 988. If somebody is having a problem with their thoughts and leaning towards ending it, really they could call 988. Is that the right number?
Yes, that is not veterinary specific. That's a nationwide suicide crisis hotline. So that was a big push over the last few years to have something that was as known as like 911 or 411 or 311 was to create this hotline. And that is a 24/7 hotline, mental health.
So I think we've covered most of the bases, unless there's something else that you think would be important to cover.
I think just, you know, the more and more people talk about this, you know, it becomes not a dirty secret. People can realize some of the things that do make this more of a challenge for the veterinary profession. And then as people who utilize the veterinary profession, remembering to say thank you and to remember that, you know, we do have our own families, our own lives. And, you know, this is a passion, but it's also our profession. And that you do need to acknowledge that there are times that we do need to take care of our own families and take care of our own pets. And know that we're all in this together. You know, it should not be an us versus them. This should be, you know, we want to be the best vets and vet staff that we can be for your horses, for your families, for your pets at home. And the best way to do that is to collaborate and to work positively together. And you are able to volunteer or write a check or do a fundraiser as you're doing, that it's know that it's going to keep this, you know, as I said, the best profession it can be.
Thank you so much for your time, and thank you for being a veterinarian. And I'm hoping that we are shedding a light on a topic and making it more comfortable to be talked about, because when you understand, like you said, well, I would have to say, we didn't say this earlier, but just from going through the experience of when my animals had to be put down, it was soul shattering. It really was, because animals are so close to us. And I know from your profile picture that, you know, you have a little Yorkie in there, you have some dogs in there. So you vets understand, they understand that this little creature weaves itself way down in our heart. And then when you have that experience of letting them go, it's just shattering. And, you know, the veterinarian, like you said, they're not only there going through that experience with the pet, you're connected to this person and you're having to watch this person go through it. And I think, you know, after when I lost my horse, I think there's PTSD a little bit here in being a pet owner and having to watch your best friend die, you know, and maybe that is part of it that just can't maybe be denied. I don't know what your take is on it from a vet, but, you know, veterinarians can go from, you know, having a cup of coffee and enjoying whatever, and then bam, you're just thrown into like a triage type situation.
I think it could be the whole gamut, right? Definitely we recognize it in the emergency clinics, right, where they sometimes do a handful of euthanasias a night, to where it just sometimes seems like that's all you're seeing. We know that our shelter vets and shelter staff, where they have to, sadly, in areas where there's overpopulation, spay and neuter your pets, there definitely is PTSD there. So, you know, I don't want to emphasize it, saying that it's for every veterinarian, because some of us are fortunate to not have to practice under those situations. But for those who are in sometimes high kill shelter areas or emergency shifts, there definitely is PTSD. And then add to that the emotional, besides losing the pet, you know, when you've got a grieving pet parent involved too, like seeing that level of emotion and hurt, there's no way that can't be scarring. And so we do recognize PTSD in those situations. And sometimes, you know, I'm leaving out what it could be like for people in other areas. Sometimes just not having a break, just the constant barrage, where sometimes there's 10-minute, 15 appointments and you're seeing animals for 12 hours. It doesn't even have to be euthanasias. It can just be having that kind of nonstop march of sick patients can start to take a toll. So I absolutely believe that, you know, to anywhere from PTSD down to just mental unhealth, and then not taking care of yourself, right? Going through that day after day after day and not having a day off or not having time for personal care or getting to the gym or taking care of your own health, it can really be the whole gambit of mental unhealthiness, being mentally unhealthy.
Yeah. Can we take a step back and go back to kind of to the beginning? I just thought of the vet student. What would your advice be to vet students, and what does NOMV do to help vet students at the beginning of their career?
Sure. So, you know, when we're talking about where, sadly, a lot of our bad habits start as veterinarians, they start as veterinary students. I'm a proud alum of Cornell University, and actually a few of the programs just reached out to me to speak to this fall about, you know, the ability to be able to talk about that, you know, things aren't good. So, you know, the idea of being a perfectionist, right? So once again, a lot of us were the number one in our classes. We get there, you don't want to show weakness. You don't want to ask for help. So what we've learned is that we need to be involved early on in the veterinary schools. So we have student ambassador programs. We're slowly starting to start chapters in each one of the vet schools. And then going in and just teaching them that it's important to have a work-life balance. In that case, it's a school-life balance, right? It was not uncommon in vet school where I would go to school at 7 o'clock in the morning, and sometimes I wouldn't leave till 1 a.m., 2 a.m., Well, was I taking proper care of my dog during that time? Was I seeing my cat? Was I doing anything for myself, or was I eating from a vending machine? Mm. So just bad dietary habits, bad, you know, not taking care of your physical body, not taking care of your mental body, being afraid to show weakness, or I shouldn't even say weakness, being able just to ask for help and say, hey, I'm over my head here. You know, so we do know that those problems start in the veterinary schools. And that's now where not one more veterinary is establishing programs in there, going to speak there, and then trying to set up alliances with the faculty there to catch some of these behaviors and just start teaching to take better care of ourselves in vet school, so that we actually are, you know, learning good life habits that will carry us into our profession.
Last question. What do you see for NOMV this year and into the future?
Well, you know, when they kind of tapped me to become president of NOMV, the number one, there's a couple things that are important to me. So number one, as you know, as I've said numerous times on here, is that it's not veterinary centric, right? So we're making sure that we're including our entire veterinary staff. So being careful around that verbiage and just making sure whenever we speak that we're talking about the entire veterinary profession and not just veterinarians. Number two, one of my little soapboxes is Clear Blueprint. So my husband and I are instrumental in developing this accreditation. And what we wanted to do is we want vet clinics that can stand out, that they go through, it basically goes through a testing process where you take these different modules and you have to score a 70 or better, and you have to include 80% of your staff. Why that's important is if I can run around and say I have the unicorn practice and I take care of my staff, but if you're coming here, you're moving across the state to take a job in my facility, well, what if that's not the case, right? Hmm. What if I just said a bunch of lies? Well, I've just made your life horrible, right? Mm-hmm. And so when you look at trying to better veterinary lives, we want them to be able to find clinics that are aligned with their mental health goals. So it's very important to have an accreditation so that not one more vet is actually looking at these veterinary clinics and use them as recruiting tools. And ultimately, if enough clinics have to raise themselves up to this bar to be able to get good applicants, then we've made a huge difference in mm-hmm. the veterinary world. So that's something that I'm feeling, I feel very important about. And then lastly, it's just really raising awareness and trying to do a better job with sponsorship and funding, because all of these programs take dollars, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, I can volunteer my time, but we need staff to run these programs. And so giving an outlet for those such as yourself to say, hey, I want to help make a difference, what can I do, is letting them know that there's these sponsorship and funding programs available so we can get the word out. And so that way there's no one out there that has not heard about Not One More Vet. They realize that the issues are there. And, you know, I joke, I almost want to make Not One More Vet an obsolete program, mm-hmm. that our profession becomes healthy enough that we no longer need to raise awareness because we're there. It's a pretty lofty goal, but you know what? As a veterinarian, I always reach for the stars. So there you go.
Thank you. And that clear blueprint, so that is aimed at clinics then, correctly? That they are, that's like a hallmark that a clinic can show that says we are very supportive of our entire staff. We're a good place to work for you. Like that it would mentally and all other aspects be a great clinic to work for. So I think that would be a great step that you've put in there to getting that stars that you're aiming at. You know, that if all clinics fell in line with that, what a better place for people to work.
I'm happy to say all five of my clinics are clear blueprint accredited, and we're just slowly adding more and more to that list every day. And so when you go on to like my website, you would see it. You see my business cards, you would see it. And so we're just trying to also, you know, after having a few years of growing the program, to really make this a nationwide program.
So just as a lighter note, as we exit here, can you tell me about your dogs?
Sure. So I was going to correct you. It's not a Yorkie.
Oh, sorry.
She's actually no, that's okay. But she kind of looks like one. So I have an Appen Pincher named Sushi, mm-hmm. who's running around here as we speak. But she's a bilge, which is most Appen Pinchers are black. Mm-hmm. She's got that kind of Yorkie coloring. So she's a bilge. And then I have a crazy little one-year-old Brussels Griffon named Griff, who is running around with his bully stick trying to show off. So those are our two current pups. And then we have our logo is a Boston Terrier. We lost our Boston last summer to congestive heart failure after a long battle. And we're in line to getting another Boston Terrier puppy this summer. So lots of fun puppy antics in our house to keep me smiling. My daughters have a cat named Doug, who I sometimes forget.
Doug.
He's not mine, but he just gave me a dirty look for not including him in the family dynamic. So
I can just see that.
Mr. Doug.
That sounds like a child's book, A Cat Named Doug.
There you go.
Well, I know that your animals are a treasure to you, just like they are to us. I mean, right now, every podcast, I just have to tell people, every podcast I do, we have a Yorkie named Whoppet, and he's sleeping on my feet like the whole time. Oh, my feet will not be cold during the podcast. Well, thank you so much. You have a great rest of your week, and I appreciate everything you're doing for NAMVI, and I especially appreciate you helping us on Endurance Horse Podcast become more aware to be more kind and loving towards our vets.
Sure. If you have any questions, check us out at nomv.org. Thank you.
Thank you. Bye. Thank you for tuning in to this episode of Endurance Horse Podcast. I'm sure that the topic took you a little bit by surprise after hearing Dr. Brian discuss the unique challenges facing veterinarians and the work of Not One More Vet, that you understood why we wanted to enlighten our listeners and inspire them to reach out and help Not One More Vet. I do hope that you take this gentle reminder to heart and pen a thank you note, heartfelt, to your veterinarian. My job here at Endurance Horse Podcast and at Warhorse Endurance isn't as stressful at all compared to what veterinarians go through, as you just heard in this episode. Just pales in comparison. But I can tell you is I am surrounded by cards that were sent to me, letters, gifts. I very often receive emails and personal messages and even phone calls with people telling me how much they appreciate the work I do. I do this for free. I do it, you know, just wanting to help the endurance community. I don't do it because I'm a great endurance rider, because I'm not. I do it because I love the sport. And sometimes I question keeping doing it, like the amount of time I put into it for this and for the other things that I do. And without fail, sometimes I will get someone contacting me. I'll get a surprise gift in the mail. My friend Mary Ellen, you know, she really blew me away a couple times with some gifts that she sent me. And she only knows me through these challenges and through this podcast. Why am I telling you about this? Because when I get a picture frame with pictures in it sent to me from the Boys and the Girls Club of Rosebud Reservation, I put that right on my wall and it reminds me why I keep doing what I'm doing. Or someone made me a quilt and I use that quilt every day on my couch and cuddle up with it. And it reminds me what I do matters. What can you do for your veterinarian to show them what you do matters? Because I'll tell you, if I quit doing this podcast, I gave up, you know, or if I gave up doing my other job that I do with Warhorse Endurance, I don't think it would be that impactful. But my goodness, if that helps me with my side projects that I do, if getting a card or a photograph helps me keep going, how powerful are all of you? I know we have over 1,000 downloads per episode. There's 1,000 of you out there listening, over 1,000. If all of you inspired 5 of your friends to do the same thing I'm asking you to do right now, what an impact could you have? Especially if you have the same veterinarian. Maybe you make crafts, maybe you make cups, maybe you make a sun catcher or buy them a gift, or maybe you do make quilts and you want to make a quilt for your veterinarian. Do something like that, or maybe buy him a gift card. But I can tell you, it's the things people made for me that keep me going every day. And like I said, what I do pales in comparison to your veterinarians. I'm telling you, it makes me keep going. We don't know what other people struggle through. You don't know what I struggle through. I don't know what you struggle through. And I know that this world can be heavy at times. But what we can do is we can for sure show an act of kindness that's almost free or basically free. Write a note. Give them the gift of a picture of your pet. Maybe they'll put that in their office. Cheer them up. Let's not let our veterinarians think that we don't care about them. Let's show them some love. Now, you know, I don't advertise things much on the podcast, but I really wanted to do Trailblazer. And it is my business when we do these 100-mile challenges. So if you go to warhorseendurance.com, you'll be supporting the podcast and supporting me through doing Trailblazer. You'll also be supporting the veterinarians, because Warhorse Endurance is going to donate $5 from each entry to Trailblazer. And I'm very picky about the award packets I send out. They are always high quality. They are always good. So if you're going to be out there conditioning your horses anyway, how about you donate 100 miles to helping not one more vet? Thank you.
We enjoyed having you along for the ride. Endurance Horse Podcast is where you get to share your adventures of riding good horses through beautiful country. Many stresses in life are washed away by a good gallop, a steady trot, or by simply saddling up your favorite horse for an easy ride. Remember, every mile a memory.